I will present probably a little bit off-topic work relating to the things that, according to the presentations that we have assisted so far. But I really would like to bring this attention as how we could use cold atoms as simulators or slash emulators of astrophysical objects. And one of the most beautiful aspects of astrophysical objects is the turbulence of photons that appears at the interior of stars. And this is exactly what we could observe in our experiments with cold atoms. And that's exactly, I suspect, that we can make very nice relations between these two physical systems, from one side astrophysical dynamics, and from the other, this all atomic and molecular, all these dynamics of photons and atoms in cold atoms, and hopefully we can establish interesting parallels in the future. So before in case I don't have time to acknowledge these people, those are the people which have done the work with us in Lisbon. So José Rodrigues, José Tito Mendonça, João Rodrigues, and Ruggero Giampaoli, especially Ruggero, who is now in Paris at the group of Alberto Bramati. He did the most of this experimental work. So the idea is to use because we are immersed in this plasma institute, the idea is really to motivate an experiment of cold atoms in the realm of a plasma physics institute. This was a very complicated task. And we managed this by telling people to give us money and convinced them that the money was worth it because what we were doing was ultra-cold atoms that are effective plasmas. And the reason why this is so is because dynamics of atoms in MODs are collective. And the reason why they are collective is because there's this beyond the single particle forces that you can derive when you write down, for example, the optical block equations and the laser cooling schemes, you also have this collective force due to multiple scattering. So you have an atom here and an atom nearby. There's a non-negligible probability that this atom will reabsorb and rescatter the photon that is emitted by another atom. So the overall effect can be casted in terms of this effective charge. Okay, so this effective charge depends on these two quantities that are there, so not only the intensity of light, but also this difference between rescattered cross-section and the direct absorption cross-section, so sigma r minus sigma l. Because sigma r usually overpasses the value of sigma l, what we have is a positive value for this charge. So this changes the dispersion relation of the excitations that we would expect, so center of mass motion, let's say, of the system. So we would expect something like if you have a gas, cold atoms that would sustain, because of short-range interactions, would sustain some sort of sound waves, sound modes. But now this changes, this dispersion relation is changed by the presence of these long-range forces, okay? So we define this so-called effective plasma frequency, and this is exactly why we motivated this whole experiment within the group of plasma physicists. And the discussion with the people in plasma physics was so fruitful that we initiated this as a very naive approach in the beginning because we never believed that it would take us very far, and people would not take us very serious. They also initiated this back in 2008, and now we observe that probably we have some reason to pursue this activity because we have some evidence that in principle this analogy is not completely wrong. And I will try to convince you that this is the case. So how can we use these cold atoms to make a claim that we are dealing with stars? Okay, we have some system that could, in principle, we can say that is described by these fluid equations, but then we also have this trap force there. And this trap force is something that gravity does naturally in physical systems. So you have gravity, so can you write this down, this Poisson equation describing the attractive force. Now, the attractive force in our systems are played by this trapping force that appears because of the Zeeman splitting that you have in your magnetopical trap scheme, okay? So the idea is, the first idea was, okay, so if this is similar to a star, if this is similar to a star, let's look what are the hydrodynamical equilibrium of this system. And we did that, and by assuming that in astrophysics, what people do, they don't really know what is the equation of states of their stars, so they assume that they have some sort of polytropic equilibrium of state. So this have this equation of state which is needed to close the system of hydrodynamic equations is something that requires additional knowledge on this hydrodynamic pressure. So we did the same. So let's see what happens in these cold atoms if we have this polytropic equation of state. And it turns out that this equilibrium equation boils down to some Land-Emden equation. So for those who are not familiar, Land-Emden equation is the equation that governs the equilibrium of stars. And this is the equation that describes the profiles in our case for some normalized quantities, okay? So now what we have extra in our system is that, so this first term is the usual thing that you would expect in Land-Emden equation. The second one is our plasma term that we attribute to multiple scattering of light. And the last one, the one, is the scale, which is due to the trap. So we normalize everything to the trap frequency. That's why we have this one. But we did this, and then what we tried was just to measure, to change the values of this detuning, because I don't have time to enter the details, but this capital omega is a function of the detuning, not a very complicated function of the detuning. But at the end, what we did is just change the values and observe what would be the values of these profiles. And then we did the integrated images, inverse Abel transform, assuming some spherical symmetry. And then we try to calculate this polytropic equilibrium. It turns out that our first conclusion was, well, if we look at these cold atoms as a polytrope, we have the value that is different from one. So it's not really an isothermal compression that we have in our system. What we have is a polytrope that, and this parameter gamma, scales different with this universal parameter xi, which is some renormalization of this plasma frequency. So if we put off together all these, so these dots here, each one of these things are for different values of the detuning, but we renormalize this in terms of this universal parameter, and in terms of this universal parameter, we have this coalescence of the thing. So this dynamic is more or less universal. And this was the first signature that in principle we can extract some consequences from this plasma-like description of cold atoms in magnetohelical traps. But this is true if we're assuming that everything is stable, let's say. So we don't really have dynamical instabilities taking place in the system. It turns out that, for example, in astrophysics system, there's this phenomenon of radiation trapping that prevents light to escape ballistically from stars. So the residence time of photons inside star can be as large as 1,000 years. This is amazing, spectacular. And then back in 2003 and 2005, the group of Robin Kaiser and Guillaume Laverie, they did some interesting measures about the lifetime, so the radiation trapping time in these magnetocouple traps. And they found that the diffusion velocity can drop down as 10 to minus 5 C, which is spectacular, given that the system is not extremely dense. The system is not dense, but we have this optical structure of the system, right? Because now we have near resonant propagation of light, and this changes a lot the structure of the dynamics of the photon, okay? So effectively, a MOT behaves as a nearly opaque system for light. So we thought about how can we do this and how can we describe this effect of radiation and plus the effect that we have multiple scattering of light that affects the dynamics of the atoms. But on the other hand, these dynamics of the atoms also affects back the dynamics of the photons. So we did this by taking into account the fact that now what we have is to include some model for the radiation. Okay, so I spare you the details, but if you do some approximations, at the end of the day, what you have is a diffusive equation for this radiation intensity dynamics. Okay, so this at the end is how do we couple the two dynamics, the atomic dynamics from one side and the photon dynamics from the other. Well, through the diffusion coefficient, because the diffusion coefficient of light depends on the intensity, on the density of the medium. So if you have 1 over n squared, roughly, and the effective charge depends on the intensity. So if you locally vary the intensity of your field, you vary this collective force. And if you vary if you displace the atoms locally, you also vary the diffusion coefficient. So now what we can find out is to work out some sort of secular equation for this model and try to investigate whether or not we have some dynamical instability. Okay, so the existence of, do we have some sort of phase separation between these two fluids? So the effective dynamics of the atoms, which is governed by this density fluid N, and the other one is the density intensity of photons E. Okay, so by putting these two together and cooking these equations, we get this model, and this is what we call Mendonça-Kaiser instability. This is a beautiful model that Mendonça and Kaiser developed in 2012. And they came with this secular equation that couples the two modes. And I spare you the details, but what is important is that if you neglect any sort of anisotropy, which is usually the case, so anisotropic situations, what we have is just this is governed by this parameter epsilon, which is roughly the curvature of intensity. Okay, so the Laplacian of intensity means that if you have a local a region of the system where you have accumulation of light, so the profile is something like that. So you have the negative Laplacian, or otherwise you have a rarefaction, what you have is a positive. Okay, so depending on local compression of light or local rarefaction of light, you can have two kinds of situations. And this is what, and this gives rise to two kinds of instabilities. So one is the oscillating bubbles, where we characterized by a real part of the frequency, a real part of the frequency that is non-zero. And this is, because we have this condition, so parametrically in terms of this beta epsilon less than zero, it turns out to be, because of sigma r is usually larger than sigma l, rescattering cross-section larger than absorption cross-section, means that this kind of oscillating bubbles situation is obtained provided that the Laplacian of I naught is less than zero. On the other hand, we had also static bubbles characterized by real part equals zero, in other words, a purely imaginary mode, so just a growing mode. This happens if we have the opposite situation. So the Laplacian of I, the intensity, is positive. Okay, so now we have to look for situations that we can distinguish to control this microscopically. Well, what we have, the parameter that we have in experiment is the detuning and the magnetic field gradient. So roughly are the two knobs that we can control in the experiment. And then we can do this kind of physics. But what is the typical lifetime for the growth of these instabilities, depending either the oscillating bubbles or the static bubbles, if you put some numbers? So they are governed by these expressions there that depend on the typical meme-free path of the photons and also on some length of this, this curvature L, or that is some scale that you can establish here, or let's say the size of your deformation in your system locally. This key gives rise to some the lifetime, or I mean growth rate of the order that is larger than 10 per microsecond, milliseconds, which means that you as a system that you can almost see with your naked eye if you look at the system. And that's roughly what people have observed in the past. People here that have worked with MOTS certainly remember this situation. When you go really close to resonance, your MOD starts to dance. And you can see with your eyes. It's really associated with this kind of physics. So we had this already. We knew this that in the literature that people observe this kind of instabilities in the MOD when they go nearly to resonance. It is exactly when you go near to resonance that this diffusive behavior becomes important. So this gave us some confidence to look to look into detail into experimental implications of this. So this is supposed to be a video, which is always like this, right? Never works. Let's see. I think it works. So what we did in the lab was just we changed the detuning to roughly minus 0.5 gamma, and observed the dynamics of the mod, and that's exactly what we see. So this is the dense. You see that this is a contour profile of the MOD in the lines, and then you see the dense of this. So you see what is the fluorescence signal of the MOD. Okay. People in the early 80s and the 90s avoided this region because it's a very dirty, for the perspective of atomic and molecular optics communities, this is a very dirty kind of physics. So you are not interested in this kind of problems. You want to go away from it. Okay, and then what we observe is that let's do Fourier transform of this, and we observe this sort of cascades, k to minus 4. This has nothing to do with Kolmogorov, because Kolmogorov is minus 5 thirds, or minus 11 thirds in terms of this quantity that we have here. And we were looking for it, is there any kind of model that gives us this different scaling in the turbulence? And we were not familiar with that, so we had to work it out. Just for you to for the record, these lines here, the gray and the blue lines, are the situations where you have a stable MOD, so you don't have these oscillations. And when you go towards this unstable situation, you have some at least one order of magnitude in terms of power spectrum. So it really means it says that you have some sort of energy injection at certain large scale. So we have to look for this, and the first evidence we went, let's say, before going deep into this detail, we just looked for the situations where we could imagine the occurrence of these static bubbles. So we avoided the situation of these dynamical instability, so the oscillating bubbles, that we, as we characterize it. And we went a little bit before that, and we those are the profiles. So you can see that, so the dots are the experimental profiles that you get from integrated imaging, and then the other ones are the inverse Abel transform, so we can really infer what is going on inside of your system. And you see that in terms of the density, you have a dip in your density. So this dip is what we suspect. So they have a dip in the atoms, which means, and we suspect that at the dip of these atoms, we have accumulation of photons. So it's really the saturation of this dynamical instability. So you have this dynamical instability, is a period growing mode. It's the atoms go away, and the photons stay inside. Okay. So it's really some trap, radiation trap. Okay, I will just go through this thing. So this is exactly what happens if you change the tuning of the system. You can go from a stable mod to this quasi-static bubble dynamics or quasi-static bubble formation. And then at a certain point, the depletion is so high that the system cannot sustain anymore, and you go deep into this oscillating bubble. How we did this experiment, because we had some issues in the beginning because of these first three integrated images, because you can claim that if you are doing integration along the line of sight, you are losing lots of information about the spectrum of what's going on. So you are integrating the spectrum, so you are losing details. So we came with this experimental setup, which consists of some sort of slides. So we pump atoms away, and we just get this with the pump probe scheme. The pump just gets the atoms away, and then we experience what's going on. So the first we start, we release the mod, then we pump these atoms. We cleanse the system with this pump scheme, and then we probe just the slice of the atoms that are there. Okay, so this is the exact, and then this is for the calibration to see exactly how much time do we need to pump or to pump away the atoms. And we saw that at first, roughly at 75 microseconds, it's enough for us to pump because we have saturation of the optical density. And this is the image of the fluctuation power that we get from these two slides. So you can clearly observe a phase transition here in the fluctuation power. This is something that we are currently investigating in terms of some entropy dropping at the phase transition. And this is what we would expect from the autocorrelation function that we get from the model. So from a theoretical model, and when you analyze the profile, the eigenvectors, not only the eigenmodes, but the eigenvectors, you can solve the system and you find this kind of what the shape of the structures that you form in the system. With that, you can calculate correlation functions, and that's what we calculated here and compared with the with the experiments. And you see here that there is a nice agreement between these correlations that you would expect. So there is some sort of correlations appearing because of the scale of these unstable solutions that you form and with the theoretical model. So in principle, this gives us hints that eventually there is some hope for us to observe these plasma-like effects and also a couple to these photon dynamics that you can in principle observe and mimic what is happening at the interior of star. So with that, I thank you for your attention. This is a picture of Lisbon.
Questions?
Thanks. Thank you for pointing out these nice analogies. In your last slides, you talked about correlations or fluctuations, and from what I know, there are no fluctuations without dissipations. And the equations you showed reminded me, especially for the frequencies, reminded me a lot of dispersion relations people use for spatially non-local materials sometimes. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Vlasov equation is used for, I think, plasmas also in or electronic plasmas. Now, I'm wondering whether you can see, observe, or give an estimate on the impact of a process people call Landau damping. So a damping mechanism due to not impurities or external buffs, but kind of a decoherence mechanism that leads to damping.
That's a very good question. The thing is that the system, usually mods are overdamped systems, right? Because you have this, especially in the regular operator conditions, operation conditions, you have your system is overdamped. For you to observe Landau damping, what you require is some collective or an isentropic process that is a collective process, so a wave particle interaction that you have damping. Exchange between the particles and the waves. The thing is that if your system is dominated by entropic situations like this, like damping, you have no hope to see this Landau damping. So I would say that theoretically, yes, but in practice, no. Okay.
Any more questions? No, let's thank Hugo again.
Thank you.